Once again, step back into the Gospels and look into the life of our Savior. I hope these studies have been helpful for you. I love doing these things, and they teach us so much about Jesus, and we see ourselves in these passages, and I think they're very encouraging for us. A lot of you have been here every single time. I'm just impressed with that, and I thank you for that and this opportunity to study these things. I said the other night, I kind of like this stuff better than Sunday night or night preaching. I kind of enjoy this kind of more of an intimate type of study. Two things I hope you've kind of gotten from all these studies, just kind of in the bigger picture of things, is number one, just a way of looking at the Bible. And you know, I do a lot of writing. A lot of times people will ask me, how do you see all the things that you see? And a lot of times it's just going through it real slowly, looking at the words, putting yourself there, and it just opens up more and more lessons for us. And I think that's very important for us. And then the second thing is just to see Jesus. And when we look at all these, we see just how compassionate he was, how much he cared, how much he really wanted to help people. And that trickles down to us today. And I think that's incredible as we think about that. Well, today we're going to work you a little bit today. I'm going to start with a little quiz, and then we're going to work our fingers because we're going to be flipping through all four Gospels today. Now, I want to start with this quiz here. And aside from the events at the death of Jesus, trial, the garden, the cross, the resurrection, that's in all four Gospels. But aside from that, there is one miracle that's found in all four Gospels. That's what we're going to talk about today. Does anyone know what's the one miracle in all four Gospels, not counting the events at the end of his life? Anyone know what that is? Take a guess? It's interesting, too. If you think about putting all the miracles on the table and say, okay, we're going to pick out one miracle and we're going to put them in all four Gospels. High on my list would be the resurrection of Lazarus, but it's not. High on my list would be casting the demons into the pigs. That's not there. Walking on water would be high on my list. It's not there. It's the feeding of 5,000. It's found in all four Gospels. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. And so what we're going to do today, we're going to start in John's account, John chapter 6, but we're going to be in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John today. So we're going to kind of work your fingers a little bit. So if you got some ribbons or little pieces of paper you want to stick hither and thither, because we'll be going back and forth a little bit. But let's read it to begin with. In John chapter 6, it seems like Matthew's account and Luke's account focuses more on the miracle. And it seems that Mark stresses the compassion of Jesus. But it's John's account that gives us a little bit more of the background, what kind of led up to this miracle, and some things that's found there. So it begins in John 6, and we'll read the first 15 verses. It says, after these things, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, or Tiberias. A large crowd followed him because they saw the signs which he was performing on those who were sick. Then Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with the disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was near. Therefore Jesus, lifting up his eyes and seeing that a large crowd was coming to him, said to Philip, where are we to buy bread so these may eat? Now he was saying this to test him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, for everyone to receive a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what is this for so many people? Jesus said, have the people sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. Jesus took the loaves, and having given thanks, he distributed to those who were seated, likewise also of the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing would be lost. So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves which were left over by those who had eaten. Therefore, when the people saw the sign which he had performed, they said, this is truly a prophet who's come into the world. Verse 15, so Jesus, perceiving that they were intending to come and take him by force to make him a king, withdrew again to the mountain by himself alone. Now, a lot of stuff here. So one of the first things I want to kind of talk about is, of all the miracles, why is this one in all four Gospels? Now, God doesn't specifically tell us that answer. He doesn't say, well, I wrote this in all four Gospels because of this reason. Okay? But there are some things I think we can kind of pull out of this and kind of learn from this. Now, let's go over to Matthew's account, Matthew 14. Like I said, we're going to be flipping, we're going to do spiritual aerobics this morning, so we're going to be back and forth a little bit. But over in Matthew's account, there's a little statement that leads a little insight to this. And Matthew 14, and in verse 21, as we talk about this count, it says, there were about 5,000 men who ate beside the women and the children. And we call this the feeding of the 5,000. Matthew says there's 5,000 men. We're not counting women and kids. So if we count women and kids, what number might we come up with? That? Easily 10,000, 15,000, maybe 20,000? That's a huge amount of people. That's a huge amount of people to feed. Can you imagine having a wedding? Oh my goodness, what that would cost. But that's a huge amount of people. Now think about this. When the Gospels are first being written, these people might want to check this out. I was there. They may want to check if that story was there. I've got my name in several books. In fact, recently I was in a bookstore in Louisville, and Kyle Pope has written a book on the Gospel of Matthew. And one of the things I like to do is check the references. I want to see what commentaries he used and things. And so I was flipping through the back of the book, and I didn't know it, but my name was there. It said Roger Shouse, Gospel Meeting in Olson Park, and that's where Kyle preaches in Amarillo, Texas. And I said, look at that. I'm in this book. And I went up to the manager of the bookstore. I said, look, that's me. He says, it sure is. I said, do I get a free copy? He says, you sure don't. But, you know, we like to see our name in print. And so I dare say one of the reasons is you've got 15, 20,000 people walking on the earth. And when this gospel comes out, I was there. That really happened. I think a second reason that this may have been in there, this is just Roger's guesses now. We're not sure on this. But most of the miracles, and this is true of what we've looked at this week, the bent over woman, the woman with the issue of blood, the synagogue officials whose little girl died. We see a miracle on one person. Everyone else gets to see the miracle, but only one person really had the miracle happen to them. Here we have 5, 10, maybe 20,000 people who didn't just witness the miracle. I actually ate some of that bread. I actually ate some of that feast. They were participants in that miracle. That's huge. No one else has ever had that many before. And then I think the third reason, and this will take a little bit of time to develop as we go through our lesson today, but I think this is one of the longest lasting miracles. One of the miracles, oftentimes the miracle is just, it's done. We're going to see there was a process with this, and we'll kind of talk about that as we kind of look at that together. Well, let's go back and kind of talk about some of the background to this. And there's really two background stories that we need to look at here. First one's found in Mark's account now. Like I said, we're going to go to all Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So now we're going to go to Mark chapter 6. And read what Mark says about this that leads up to this. Mark chapter 6. And let's look at verse 30 to 32. Here it says, the apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest for a while, for there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. So they went away in a boat to a secluded place by themselves. And so one of the things we're doing is Jesus has gotten away with his apostles and they're kind of reflecting upon some of the things that they had just done. It's interesting that this is called a secluded place. It wasn't isolated. Because what we notice from verse 33 of the same chapter, the people saw them going and many recognized them and ran on there together on foot from all the cities and got there ahead of them. So imagine they're in this boat here. Instead of going to the middle, they could go into the middle of that sea, and that's a huge sea. They could go into the middle of the sea, and no one would have ever seen them. Instead, they're kind of going along the coast. And everyone on the land is seeing that, and they've seen where they're heading, so they're running up ahead. And so when they get there, there's already there. The writer R.C. Foster said this. He was traveling in a direction and at a rate of speed which furnished an invitation to those who desired to follow. It is a fascinating picture with a crowd made strung out along the lake for miles, with every person exerting himself to the utmost, running or at least hurrying as best as he could. The young and the strong would be far ahead, and the older and the handicapped would be far behind. But there's that image, all stretched out because they see Jesus over there. Now, there's a second story behind this, and this is in Matthew's account now. Back to Matthew 14. I have tired fingers when we're done this morning. But back in Matthew's account, it says in verse 13 and verse 14 in Matthew 14, verse 13, it says, "Now when Jesus heard about John, he withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself. And when the people heard of this, they followed him on foot from the cities. When he went ashore, he saw a large crowd and felt compassion for them and healed the sick." He heard about John. What did he hear about John? Okay, let's do a little time out here. Okay, who was John? John who? John the Baptist, his cousin. Okay, John the Baptist was how much older than Jesus? 6 months. John the Baptist, Jesus at this point is about how old, roughly? 32, 33. Okay, he's a young man. And what happened to John? Got beheaded. What happened? He's cutting trees down, got too close to the saw. Because. Okay. And the reason why he was in prison was because he told Herod that he had his brother's wife. He shouldn't have been married to Herod. So here is somebody, first of all, who's a family member. Anytime a family member dies, it's tough. Here's a young man. People in their 30s aren't supposed to die. That's hard. Number three, he died violently. He was beheaded. He was executed by the state, we could say. Number four, he died for telling the truth. He didn't die for something he did wrong. He died for what was right. And number five, this is coming down the road in a few months for Jesus. It's going to be the same thing. He's going to be a young man who dies violently for doing what's right. And so you put all that in there, and there's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of feeling, there's a lot of thought there. So Jesus gets in the boat with the apostles and gets to, because he doesn't have very much time by himself. It seems like every moment there's people around him, people question him, and people needing him, people bringing sick. And so he's out there reflecting. I mean, he has to see, as the news came, the day will come when somebody will say, "Did you hear that Jesus died?" And so this is just kind of a foretaste of what's going to happen to him. And so that's what happens. Now, over in Luke's account, Luke chapter 9, I haven't been to Luke yet, but Luke chapter 9. So Jesus is in the boat, and he goes to the shore, and there's a large crowd awaiting him. Verse 11 says, "But the crowds were aware of this," Luke 9:11, "and followed him and welcomed him in. He began speaking to them about the kingdom of God and curing those who had need of healing." So I like that phrase, welcoming him. It's like he's inviting them, yeah, and he wasn't bothered by them coming. In verse 12, it says, "Now the day was ending, and the 12 came and said to him, 'Send the crowd away.'" We talked about that yesterday, didn't we? That's always the answer of the apostles. Send them away. Send the children away. Remember that woman who was shouting at them, the Syrophoenician woman, send her away. That's always the answer. And that's what they said there. Send them away. And that wasn't going to be what the Lord was going to do here. This was a test. And so when we go back to our account in the book of John, John chapter 6, Jesus asked Philip, he says in verse 5, he says to Philip, testing him, "Where are we to buy bread so that these may eat?" And so this is going to be a test of faith. And it's interesting reading what Philip's answer is going to be. Verse 7, Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, for everyone to receive a little." There's three thoughts in there you need to see real quickly. First of all, a denarii, if you go all the way back to our Sunday morning Bible class, that's what a guy got in a day. He basically worked. He got a denarius or a denarii. And so he said 200 of these. That's almost like 3/4 of a year's wages. Not enough to feed that. Can you imagine someone coming up to you and said, we're having some folks over, and can you chip in some money? Yeah, how many people you got coming over? Oh, about 20,000. Good night. Can you imagine that? And so, you know, Philip sees the problem. Philip has no solution. And what he says tells us some things. First of all, even if we had 200 denarii, that's not enough. I don't know about you, but I don't carry 3/4 of my salary, my year's salary in my wallet. Most of us don't do that. Most of us don't say, well, I need 10 or 20,000. Well, here, I got it right here. Most of us don't carry that kind of money. The apostles didn't carry that kind of money. Secondly, as we already read, it's getting late. Where are they going to buy that kind of food? There's no 24-hour Walmart. Where are you going to go into some village and say, we need food for about 20,000 people? Well, who's got that? And notice again what Philip was saying here. He was saying in verse 7, for everyone to receive a little. Philip was thinking, we're not going to give you all very much. We're going to give you just a little bit. Contrast that, will, if you will, as we jump ahead to verse 11 and 12. When Jesus feeds them, it says that they ate as much as they wanted. And the first part of verse 12 says they were filled. Jesus gave them all. Philip just had a little bit there. And again, what Philip brings before us is where you and I stand sometimes. We see a problem. We don't know what to do. We want the church to grow. We don't know how. We want to keep our young people safe. We don't know how. And across this land, there's a lot of churches that are struggling and stagnant and dying. They recognize that, but they don't know what to do. They're in a Philip position. I see the problem. I don't see what to do. Now, what did Philip forget about? What was the very first miracle? The very first miracle he did. Turn water to wine. If he could turn water to wine, and we're standing right here at this Sea of Galilee, he could turn that whole thing into something, couldn't he? Couldn't he? If he could heal lepers, couldn't he do something? If he could raise the dead, couldn't he do something? Philip never thought about that. I see the problem, but I don't see Jesus. My answer is right here. My solution is right here. And I think that's what Jesus was trying to get him to see. Turn to me. What Philip should have said is, I don't know how we can do this, but I'm so glad you're here, Lord. I know you'll come up with something. Lord, you can do something. But that was never the thought of Philip. And that's what we see. So the Lord has them sit down in groups. Back in Luke 9:14, it says they sat in groups of 50 and 100. Now, if you will, turn your Bible to Mark's account once again, Mark chapter 6. Again, you just put all this together and we just kind of get these interesting thoughts here. Mark chapter 6 and in verse 41. Let's talk about this just for a minute here. Let's talk about what they got. Okay. Simon found a boy, a lad, and what did he have? 5 loaves and 2 fish. John tells us they were barley. Barley is a poor man's snack. Okay. If you had any substance, you'd at least eat wheat. These are barley. Now, sometimes you might see pictures of this, and it looks like a big old Italian loaf of bread, you know, and a big old fish on there. That's really not the image. You ever see these little orange crackers with peanut butter in there? That's kind of what we're talking about. We're talking about little barley wafers. And the fish weren't big old fish. You know, this is like fish and chips here. It's like dried sardines. And the only reason why they have these dried sardines is help give some taste for that barley, because that barley is kind of like eating cardboard. So you got these little dried sardines you put on the barley, and all this is a kid's snack. That's all this is. It is interesting, Jesus turned water to wine. He could have turned those crackers into lamb or turned them into vegetables. He could have changed the substance, but he doesn't do that. He keeps the substance just as it is. And then the boy brings his snack, And Jesus prays about it, which is a wonderful lesson for us as he does this. But then in Mark 6 and in verse 41, it says in verse 40, they sat down groups of 50, hundreds and fifties. Then he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed the food. That's a good example why we pray for a meal. He blessed the food, broke the loaves, and kept giving them to the disciples to set before them. Let that soak in for a minute. I think sometimes we get the idea that when Jesus multiplied this food, it came down for this group, it came down for that group, it came down for this, it just came down for all of us. It didn't say that. The apostles would take it to them. The apostles would take it to them. The apostles. Can you imagine being in a restaurant and there's 10,000 people and there's only 12 waiters? Good night. That takes a while, doesn't it? That's why I say this may be one of the longest lasting miracles. Because you got 12 men who are going to this group of 50, then this group of 100, then this group. They keep going back and forth to Jesus, back and forth, back and forth. And he keeps giving it to them. And it says they were eating. They just didn't take a bite. It wasn't like the Lord's Supper. You know, when the Lord's Supper, the bread's passed, we pinch off just a little bit. They ate till they're satisfied. Some of us men, we would probably inhale a lot of those. You know, if after our class, we were all going to go out to eat, and all we were going to have was those peanut butter and orange crackers. I'm going to need more than one package, please. Okay, that's not going to do it for me. Some of us would need a whole bunch. And so that, again, kind of keeps this idea of what this was going on. Now, when they were done, back in John's account, go back to John chapter 6. Let me open this up first of all. Does anyone have any question? You know, that's kind of the miracle. Does anyone have any question about what took place so far as we're going through this? Any thoughts or comments? Yeah. And so, back over here in John's account, after the miracle takes place, it says in 12, when they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing will be lost. How many did they gather up? How many apostles are there? Huh. You ever think about that? How interesting. Each apostle got a basket. Each apostle got a basket. Now, I don't know if that was done on purpose or not, but that's kind of interesting, isn't it? So that none would be left over. And that's kind of unique about that. And so as John's account ends, it says in verse 15 that they were trying to make Jesus a king by force. I believe they saw Jesus as a Moses. You know, Moses fed them manna from heaven. Jesus has multiplied the food. Moses delivered them from Egypt. Jesus is going to deliver us from Rome. And so the idea is they're going to lift Jesus up on their shoulders. He is now our king. This is the second time someone tried to make Jesus a king. You remember the first time? Happened a long time ago when we first started. It was in the temptation. And old Satan said, bow down to me, and I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. I will make you the king. If you bow down to me, we'll bypass this cross. You're going to be King of Kings and Lord of Lords, but you have to go through the cross. Do it my way, and there's no cross. Bow down to me, and I'll give this to you. I don't think he even had the authority, but he's saying that. So this is a second attempt to try to make Jesus a king. And the way of the cross was the way Jesus was going to do that. And so this was not going to be done this way. And so a couple more thoughts we need to look at before we end this. Carry on with me now in John chapter 6. Okay. In verse 26 of John 6, it says, Jesus answered them, said, truly, truly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. So another day, they're following Jesus, but they're not following Jesus because they think he's the king, nor the Messiah, nor the Savior of the world. They're following Jesus because yesterday I got a free meal. And maybe today I'll get another free meal. And maybe tomorrow I'll get another free meal. Maybe we don't have to work anymore. We just kind of follow Jesus around, and he's going to feed us all the time. Verse 41 of the same chapter, John 6. Therefore, the Jews were grumbling about him because he says, I am the bread that came down out of heaven, describing his messiahship there. Verse 66 of the same chapter. It says, as a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. He stopped feeding them. I am the bread of life. You need me. You need to listen to me. And when they heard that, show's over for us. We came for a free meal, and he's not going to give us a meal, so we're going to go home. And so many of them quit walking with him. Jesus, verse 67, said to the 12, do you not want to go away also, do you? And Simon and Peter answered and said, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have words of eternal life. This story comes up one more time we need to look at. Back in Mark. After the feeding of the 5,000, this comes up one more time. Mark chapter 8 now. We start in verse 13. Mark 8, verse 13 says, leaving them, he again embarked and went away to the other side. And when they had forgotten to take bread, they did not have more than one loaf in the boat with them. Now understand, this is Peter and the apostles. You got 13 apostles and Jesus. You got 14 guys in the boat. They got one loaf among them. Okay? And he was giving them orders, verse 15, saying, watch out, beware of the leaven of Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. They began to discuss with one another the fact that they had no bread. Jim, isn't that the truth of life? We're up there just preaching away, and people are talking about their bellies. They ain't listening. They wasn't even listening to Jesus. They started saying, well, Peter, why didn't you bring the bread? John, why didn't you bring the bread? And they're discussing that as Jesus is trying to teach them. Jesus, aware of this, verse 17, said to them, why do you discuss the fact that you have no bread? Do you yet not see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? Do you not remember? Look at verse 19. When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of pieces, broken pieces, did you pick up? They said to him, 12. When I broke the 7 for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of broken pieces did you pick up? And they said to him, 7. And he said to them, do you yet not understand? I'm in the boat with you. If I could feed 5,000, which probably was 10 or 20,000, if I could feed 4,000, which might have been 8 or 10,000, and there's just 13 of us in this boat, don't you get it? I can take care of you. I can take care of you. They didn't get it. And so that's kind of the story. I've got a few concluding thoughts I want to make, but what are some thoughts that maybe you have from the story? Yeah, that's right. 5,000 and then 4,000. And he mentions that here. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Does and what we start reading after this is more opposition, more opposition, more opposition, more questions, and more denying of who he is. So it's kind of like he was at the peak, and then he starts going down with the people not grasping who he is. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we feed them, but not what they want. We feed them. We feed them the Word of God. We feed them what we're all about. And yeah, yeah. I had a discussion the other day with a lady. She called me up and she wanted to know. You know, she goes, do y'all have a gymnasium for high school kids to play Friday night? I said, no, man, we don't. She goes, well, why don't you? I said, well, why don't you send them to the post office? Why don't you send them to the post office and let them play basketball? Well, a post office doesn't have a gymnasium. I said, how come? Because their whole job is to mail stamps. You got it. Our whole job is to get people to heaven. Playing ball has nothing to do with getting to heaven. She hung up. But that happens. That happens. But people don't get that. You don't go to a heart doctor when you got a problem with your foot. He deals with hearts. Okay? So I don't go to McDonald's with my prescription to get filled. Why? Because it's McDonald's. We understand that in that concept, in that context. What the world doesn't understand, kind of the old, remember the old Superman show? They say up in the sky, it's a bird's plane, you know, they didn't know what it was. That's where the modern church is today. People don't know if it's a church, if it's a school, if it's an organization. They don't know what it is. And so people run to the church for everything. They think the church is supposed to take care of wellness and this and that, and they miss that the emphasis is to prepare people for heaven. That's what we're all about. And we need to do that. What are some other thoughts that maybe you have? Could not only take care of their hunger physically, he could take care of what was missing spiritually. That's something they didn't get. Okay. He didn't. That's interesting to me. Right. Sometimes we walk through life with plan A. Graduate high school, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to marry this pretty girl, we're going to have four or five kids, they're all going to grow up and become Christians, they will be fighting whether they're going to get athletic scholarships or honor scholarships at school, they're going to give me a boatload of kids, and life is going to be good. I'm going to sit on my front porch as a grandpa, and life is good. That's plan A. God sometimes has plan B. That pretty girl may not want to go out with you. And those kids may not know the difference between a hockey puck and a basketball. And, you know, sometimes we start off, it's going to be this way, and God's plan B is what's going to be. Sometimes we have a hard time with that. Go right here. You feel? You feel you're not hungry anymore. So they all could see this. They could see Peter coming with a, I don't know, if he had a basket or what he brought in there, how he gave the food to everybody. Of course, we would have problems today with people touching it and everything. But you know, and here comes John with however he did it, and here comes another group, and they just kept doing it. And they could actually see it. They could see it. And you know, then they actually ate it. And that was part of them being part of that miracle. That's very significant. You never seeing Paul giving donkey rides for a nickel. Never seeing autographed pictures of Peter. None of that stuff. It's always spiritual teaching. And the whole point of the miracles was really to prove who I am. Why should I listen to you? Because I can do what no one else can do. I am God on earth. That was to grab their attention, but that didn't save them. They had to listen, just as you and I have to do also. Don't think so. I know Jim might have better on that than I do, but I tend to think, because he would kind of, more than anyone else, he expected more out of the apostles than anyone else. And more than anyone else that got thumped was the apostles. Matthew alone, four times, he says, "Oh, ye of little faith." And that most time goes to the apostles. I think he wanted them to get it, but they just had so much culture, so much, you know, and Jesus, he didn't walk with, you know, all the pictures we see has a halo. He didn't have a halo. He didn't walk with golden footprints. And whenever you see, you know, the masterpieces, you know, here's everybody kind of wearing drab clothes. There's Jesus in spotty white. I mean, he's just, you know, that's Jesus. I don't think that it was like that. And so I think they thought, I bought a furniture. I mean, I bought a table off him. You know, he's a carpenter. He works with wood, and he's one of us. And that's God. Not what they were thinking. Where's the white horses? Where's the troops? Where's the banners? Because they were thinking, we're going to go back to the days of David. We're going to be an independent nation again. We're going to kick Rome out of here. And we're going to be strong, and we're going to build forts and all that. And no, they started on the wrong step, and every step was wrong after that. Let's talk a little bit about 12 baskets, leftovers. I like that idea. You know, sometimes I think when we come to services, we want the sermon to answer all my problems. There's no such sermon like that. I've had people tell me, give me one verse, they'll fix everything. Well, there is no one verse to fix everything. And what we do in sermons and bulletins, classes like this, is we get a fragment. That's what we have. And we need to gather them up. We gather up year after year, all these fragments, and guess what? It builds our faith. That's what builds our faith. And it's not just one sermon. It's not just one article. It's not one class. It's all these fragments I've collected through the years. Some of us can go back and remember a sermon here that changed my life, or something here I didn't know, and I learned this. And we've saved all these pieces. That's what builds our faith. Over to Matthew 7. We'll kind of end on this. But over in Matthew 7, as Jesus ends the Sermon on the Mount, he doesn't end it like I do. I always say, let's stand and sing. There's no standing and singing here. In fact, Jesus was sitting when he told this. But he ends the Sermon on the Mount by telling us a story. And it says in verse 24 of Matthew 7, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine, acts on them, may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. Rains fell, floods came, winds blew and slammed against that house, and it did not fall, for it had been founded upon the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them would be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. Rain fell, floods came, the winds blew and slammed against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. Now, we often notice, and I think it's right to do this, the differences. One man heard. One man heard and acted. One man built on sand. One man built on the rock. One man's house went flat. The other man's house stood. Those are the differences. Similarities are they both had rain. They both had wind. They both had a flood. Both of them. And so what this tells us is Jesus never promises you, if you follow me, you're never going to have a stormy day. What it tells you is you're going to have rain. It's going to come. And it comes in multiple fashions. It may come that phone call in the middle of the night. That happened to us a few years ago. You know, you always hear that proverbial midnight phone call. We were at home. My daughter was out, and my youngest son was out. And my wife was already in bed, and the phone rang. And my son Jordan answered and said, Dad, it's the police. They want to talk to you. And before I got to the phone, I figured it was my youngest son. He's kind of much like me. And He was known to go toilet paper houses. And I just figured that guy got caught, you know. And so I was preparing a little speech, like, why don't you keep him for about 2 days and he'll learn his lesson, you know. Well, I got on the phone and there had been a car accident. My daughter had been involved. You need to come now. That's all he said. So I woke my wife up. My wife's a nurse. We're just going. We're passing two hospitals. And I know enough in the medical world that they should have taken her to this one or to this one. And to go to this one, it was very serious. Not one time did I think, why is this happening? Not one time did I think, well, I'm the preacher. I can't, you know. What I thought is, here's my rain. Here's my flood. Here's my wind. We got to the hospital. We waited and we waited and we waited. We knew nothing. I didn't know if she was alive. And then I finally, after a long time, went to the desk, and I was kind of forceful, but I said, tell us. Just tell us. And they said, well, go in here into this room. I just almost collapsed, because I've been with families. That's when the chaplain comes in. That's bad news. Well, we went to this little room, and finally, she was alive, and they let us go back and see her. Long story short, she's okay. Everything's good. But it's that little moment there. And what I tell you is, you will have, I wish I could say you'll never have rain in your life, but you will. I wish I could say you'll never have a storm, but you will. But the problem is, if we wait until those moments to start laying a foundation, it's too late. You can't hold the door closed against the wind and try to bail water with the other hand and then try to lay a foundation. You can't do it. You have to lay foundation in the sunshine. So when the storms come, there I stand. My prayer as we were going to the hospital is, just keep her alive so I can see her. The Lord did. He answered that prayer. And so what I want you to see is, every Sunday when Mr. Jim is preaching sermons to you, they're more than just sermons. They're more than just good sermons. He's handing you a brick to lay down your foundation. Someday, you're going to need that. But too many people wait until the storm is coming, and then they try to decide, what should I do? Well, it's too late. Too late. And so when we think about these 12 baskets, I believe this week has been some of these baskets. We've gathered some fragments. And it may be next week. It may be 6 months from now. It may be 6 years from now. You need to pull out one of these fragments because it may help you. And that's how we build our foundation. That's how we build our faith. That's how we get strong in the Lord, is that it's not one thing. It's just one thing here, one thing here, one thing here, and together that makes us what we should be. Okay, any final thoughts? This girl here has been real quiet. The whole week, y'all been real quiet. Y'all got anything?